Imagine waking up on a freezing, windswept beach. You know, you have no memory of who you are or, well, how you got there.
Yeah, just totally disoriented.
Exactly. And there's this hospital IV tube still dangling from your arm. Plus, the only tool you actually have to survive in this completely desolate place actively blinds you when you try to use it. Welcome to St. Amelia.
It's a genuinely uncomfortable scenario to put a player in. Which is the whole point.
Right. If you are fascinated by the psychology of fear and, you know, how absolute tension is designed, you're going to want to pull up a chair for this one.
Because we're looking at a masterclass in stripping away basically any illusion of safety.
Definitely. Because today is July 29, 2026, and the gaming world is currently buzzing. Like, major gaming outlets just got 3 full hours of hands-on preview time with one of the most anticipated and, honestly, mysterious releases of the year.
Silent Hill. Townfall.
Yes, Townfall. It drops on September 24. And thanks to this exhaustive, incredibly detailed breakdown from Tech and Review, we finally have a clear picture of what this nightmare actually entails.
And it is a radical departure from what most people might expect. I mean, the publisher essentially handed the keys of this massive legacy franchise over to a small independent studio in Glasgow called Screenburn Interactive.
Which is wild. So the mission for our deep dive today is to unpack exactly how this Scottish indie studio is dismantling all those worn-out, predictable horror tropes, and how they're rebuilding psychological terror completely from the ground up.
Yeah, and what those specific design choices teach us about the actual mechanics of fear.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we even talk about how this game plays or, you know, the monsters you face, we really have to look at the massive shift in where and how you, the player, actually exist in this world.
Oh, yeah. That geographic shift is jarring. I mean, the game abandons the traditional American setting of Silent Hill entirely. You aren't wandering through a foggy Midwestern town anymore.
Right, they cross the Atlantic.
Exactly. The game transplants you to St. Amelia, Scotland in the year 1996. It's this bleak coastal municipality that just feels entirely isolated from the rest of the world.
That setting alone totally changes the flavor of the dread. Like we mentioned at the start, you're playing as Simon Ordell. He's an American who wakes up washed ashore on these desolate, rusted docks.
The 5E tube and the patient wristband.
Yeah. He's completely out of his element. And frankly, so are you as the player.
Well, it sets up a totally different thematic foundation. Like, if we look back at the classic Silent Hill formula.
Like Silent Hill 2, especially.
Yeah, right, the seminal one. The nightmare realm in those games was usually an individualized mirror. It was a reflection of the protagonist's personal guilt or, you know, localized trauma.
But this is different.
Very. St. Amelia presents this haunting tapestry of collective socioeconomic collapse.
Yeah.
Like, this place was once a bustling fishing port, but it has been systematically devoured by an industrial energy conglomerate known as CEG.
Wow.
So the horror here isn't just internal, it's systemic. It's about corporate exploitation, industrial tragedy, and community displacement on a massive scale.
The tragedy of a whole town being bled dry, yeah. Not just one guy facing his inner demons.
Oh.
But to make you actually feel that crushing weight, Screenburn made a massive change to how you view the world.
The camera shift.
Yeah. They permanently shifted the perspective from the traditional third-person view, where you're looking over the character's shoulder, to a deeply claustrophobic first-person view. You're looking directly through Simon's eyes.
Which is a huge deal for a franchise like this.
It is. And I was trying to wrap my head around why this feels so much more terrifying. It's basically like ripping the rearview mirrors off your car before being forced to drive down a dark, winding mountain road at midnight.
That is a great way to put it. That lack of peripheral awareness is key here. Because in a third-person game, you have a massive advantage. You have this omniscient floating camera.
Where you can cheat. Like, you can huddle your character safely behind a concrete wall and then rotate the camera to peek around the corner to see what's coming without actually moving.
Exactly. In Townfall, you can't peek around a corner without exposing your actual head. You can't see what's creeping up behind you without physically turning your back on whatever is right in front of you.
It's so stressful just thinking about it.
It forces a state of absolute, undeniable vulnerability. You know, you are trapped inside Simon's limited field of vision. And that forced claustrophobia in the environment perfectly sets the stage for the claustrophobia of the game's core survival mechanic.
Oh, man.
Because that vulnerability is completely compounded by the primary tool you're given to navigate this world.
Oh, this thing, the CRTV. It just sounds like a total nightmare to use.
It is brilliantly frustrating. The CRTV is this handheld analog device. It's essentially a combination of a small cathode ray tube television an AM/FM radio tuner, and a very rudimentary analog sonar.
Like a bulky retro 90s Sony Walkman.
Yeah, exactly like that, with a tiny flickering screen.
And it is incredibly demanding. Like, the preview explains that to use it, you can't just press a single button and pull up a clear map. You have to manually align RGB video signals.
Mm-hmm. Which takes actual time and focus.
Right. And for anyone not familiar, that means you're physically turning these heavy little dials to line up the red, green, and blue light waves on the screen just to get a coherent picture. You have to tune broadcast frequencies through heavy static to decode lore, or even just to track monsters moving through the fog.
Yeah, you're constantly fighting the device itself.
But the physical cost of doing this is what I don't get. When Simon uses this thing, he physically raises the small screen directly into his field of vision. It blocks your sight lines. You cannot move at a full sprint while looking at it.
So I have to push back here.
Okay, go ahead.
Isn't a video game tool supposed to make things easier? Why is making the player practically blind and forcing them to stare at static a brilliant design choice?
What's fascinating here is how the CRTV actively manipulates player cognition. I mean, it's a deliberate weaponization of human cognitive limits.
Weaponizing limits, how so? Think about the processing power of your own brain, right? When you pull up that screen to meticulously calibrate a radio frequency, your visual attention is entirely consumed by that tiny, static-filled rectangle.
Okay, yeah. You're locked in on the screen.
Right. You are concentrating on matching up little colored lines. But the game's spatial 3D audio is still running in the background.
Oh, God.
So while you're staring intently at this little waveform graph, you are simultaneously hearing the wet, shuffling footsteps of something grotesque moving in the dark corridor just outside your peripheral vision.
That is awful. It's like trying to text a complex, important message on your phone while someone is aggressively screaming at you in a pitch black room. Your brain just can't process both threats at once.
Precisely. Hmm. It creates this state of intense sensory overload. Your brain is trying to solve a delicate, fine motor mechanical puzzle, but your basic survival instincts are screaming at you to drop the device and run from the auditory threat.
I'd be panicking constantly.
And the device demands resource management, too? Hitting the high-intensity sonar pulse rapidly drains these rare AA batteries that you have to desperately scrounge for in abandoned desks.
And wait, doesn't the CRTV also react to Simon's physical state?
It does. It acts as a physiological feedback loop. So if Simon gets injured, or if his panic rises from witnessing something horrifying, the screen literally jitters and the signal alignment becomes totally erratic.
That's so punishing.
It is. You have to find a way to steady yourself just to get your only survival tool to function.
So because the CRTV leaves you so incredibly vulnerable and distracted, your entire approach to moving through this world has to fundamentally change. You cannot just power your way through St. Amelia.
Not at all.
The combat and stealth mechanics in this game sound less like an action movie and more like a desperate, pathetic scramble for survival.
Yeah, survival is incredibly fragile here. The developers, Screenburn, actually have a history with deep stealth design. They are veterans of Alien, Isolation.
Oh, well, that explains a lot.
Right. A game famous for making you feel hunted, and that pedigree really shows here. Combat in Townfall is explicitly designed as a high-risk, last-ditch resort.
Well, Simon is an untrained civilian. He's not some action hero. The preview notes that if you manage to find a firearm, it is incredibly clunky. Your aim is unsteady, and it's heavily affected by physical sway and tension.
You're not going to be making any clean headshots.
No. And if you actually pull the trigger, the unsuppressed gunshot rings out and alerts every single monster on the entire city block.
You might solve the immediate problem in front of you, but you basically just turned a manageable situation into a lethal ambush.
Right. Well, what about melee weapons? Can I just grab a pipe and swing away?
You can find wooden planks or rusted pipes, sure, but they degrade and break rapidly upon impact. And, you know, you cannot take much punishment yourself. Two solid hits from an enemy and you are incapacitated.
That is brutal. But surely there's a way to heal quickly, right?
The healing process actually reinforces that fragility. There is absolutely no modern auto-regeneration.
You mean I can't just crouch behind a desk for 5 seconds until the red jelly leaves my screen and I'm magically at full health?
No, not at all. You have to manually apply vintage antiseptic sprays and wrap bandages in real time. It takes precious seconds.
Meaning you can't just pause the game to heal.
Exactly. If you get attacked while trying to patch yourself up, the animation is interrupted, leaving you completely defenseless and likely dead.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. The creature design, totally leans into this vulnerability. Like, we are not dealing with brainless zombies pacing back and forth on a set path.
No, they're much worse.
The enemies are these fleshy, skinless humanoids, and they don't operate on traditional game logic. In a lot of games, enemies have simple pathfinding. You know, they walk from point A to point B on an invisible track.
Right, the patrol routes.
But here, they actively sniff the air. They will lean against walls to listen for your footsteps. They will abruptly double back through doorways just to check a corner they already passed. It forces you into this terrifyingly slow, calculated pace.
Because you are relying entirely on deep stealth mechanics, you have to manage acoustic physics constantly.
The sound design sounds incredible.
It's vital. If you walk over shattered window glass, it crunches loudly. If you wade through knee-deep puddles in a flooded basement, the splashing generates noise that draws them right to you.
And it's a coastal Scottish town, so of course everything is flooded and decaying. You can't escape the water.
Which means you are constantly evaluating your environment for hazards. Now, the preview did note that you can use the environment to your advantage, though. Like, you might throw a glass bottle or a brick to trip a car alarm down the street just to draw them away from a door you need to get through.
But the preview also mentioned you can't abuse that, right?
Right, because the artificial intelligence is dynamic. It learns. If you throw too many bottles into the same corner, the creatures stop investigating the noise blindly.
Oh, no.
They realize they are being tricked, and they start searching the hiding spots around where the noise actually originated.
That is horrifying. They hunt the thrower, not the distraction.
It demands absolute respect for the environment.
It really does. But because you're forced to move at this incredibly slow, deliberate crawl just to stay alive, you are naturally pushed to meticulously observe your surroundings, which is exactly how the game delivers its story, right?
Yes. The architectural storytelling in St. Amelia is incredibly dense. Screenburn has built a world that communicates its tragedy without relying on, you know, spoon-fed expositional cutscenes.
No huge lore dumps.
Right. You are piecing together the narrative through environmental clues left behind by the people who used to live there.
It's all these little mundane details of 1996 life that have been totally twisted by whatever happened here. Like, you're looking at missing cat flyers on cork boards, electricity meter payment cards, municipal protest banners about the energy company.
Yeah, the CEG footprint is everywhere.
Exactly. You literally have to find vintage desktop computers and wait for the screeching dial-up modem handshake to finish just to access buried corporate emails. And then you get these fragmented poetic riddles and distorted warnings coming through the CRTV broadcast channels.
The game's director, John McKellen, actually spoke about their philosophy on this narrative approach. He referenced how people are still theorizing about the lore of the original Silent Hill 2 decades later.
Oh yeah, the Reddit threads are still active.
Exactly. He said, and I quote, "If we are too explicit, we miss that magic. And if we don't do enough, no one will care. We strive to thread that exact needle."
It sounds like a massive balancing act.
This raises an important question about the discipline required from the writers, because it is incredibly tempting, especially in modern gaming, to make sure the player understands every single piece of lore you've written.
You want people to see your hard work.
Of course. But over-explaining mechanics or plot points completely destroys surreal dread. If you explain exactly how a monster is made, it turns a nightmare into a sterile logic puzzle.
Right. But on the flip side, if you underexplain it, the player just feels confused and gives up.
So how do they strike that balance? It requires a delicate equilibrium. The preview notes that every piece of documentation serves as a structural component, not just flavor text.
Okay, can you give an example?
Sure. For example, a letter you find in a municipal office about ecological violations connects directly to a corporate memo on a desktop computer about secret research into resonant audio waves.
Oh, I see.
The developers leave just enough structural breadcrumbs to ignite community theory crafting. They are basically allowing players to synthesize the clues and construct their own hypotheses about how this industrial avarice triggered a supernatural nightmare.
Trusting the player's intelligence to put those pieces together is a bold move. And honestly, trusting an indie developer to execute this delicate high-wire act of first-person design and narrative ambiguity, I mean, that is a massive risk for a legacy publisher like Konami.
It really is.
We are talking about a major corporation handing their crown jewel to a relatively small team.
It's a risk, but it reveals a broader industry strategy that Konami has implemented recently, which is quite fascinating.
The decentralization thing, right.
Exactly. Instead of forcing one massive internal studio to churn out a sequel every 5 years, which often risks franchise burnout and creative stagnation, they are decentralizing. They are greenlighting multiple distinct titles simultaneously.
Right. So on one hand, you have Bloober Team working on the high-fidelity, very traditional third-person remake of Silent Hill 2.
Safe, familiar, nostalgic.
Yes. And at the exact same time, Screenburn gets the funding to take these wild, uncompromising creative risks with Townfall.
It insulates the publisher from single project vulnerability while allowing specialized teams to do what they do best. And Screenburn is clearly backing up their artistic vision with an incredibly impressive tech stack.
They're using Unreal Engine 5.
They are, and they are pushing it to its absolute limits. Specifically, they're leveraging Nanite virtualized geometry.
Okay, let's break that down for a second. What does Nanite actually mean for the person holding the controller?
Basically, instead of using flat textures to simulate detail, Nanite allows the game engine to render millions of microscopic polygons in real time. Imagine every single brick in a decaying wall or every shard of rusted metal on a dock being rendered as a unique 3D object without causing the game to crash.
That is wild.
It creates photorealistic decay, and they are combining that with Lumen Global Illumination.
Which handles the lighting, right.
Exactly. Well, it calculates light scattering in real time. So if you shine a flashlight into heavy, rolling, volumetric sea fog, the light doesn't just hit a flat wall of white.
It actually behaves like real light.
Yes. It scatters, bounces, and diffuses through the mist, just like it would in real life, hiding what's in the shadows and making the fog itself feel incredibly oppressive.
And the audio tech is just as crucial. You have this atmospheric score by Pilot Priest blending dark synth waves with analog static. Plus, they are fully utilizing the PlayStation 5's DualSense controller to enhance that tactile connection.
Oh, the haptics are brilliant.
You were talking about the haptic feedback earlier. It's not just a basic rumble feature. The preview mentioned that you actually feel the physical mechanical resistance and the heavy clicks of the CRTV dials right in the triggers of the controller.
It forces your hands to feel the struggle your character is going through.
The technical execution is clearly there to support the psychological goals. And the market sentiment reflects that success. Coming out of this preview, the game generated an 88% highly positive critical reception and a massive 9.4 out of 10 for design innovation.
Which is huge for a horror game preview.
So what does this all mean? If you aren't normally a horror fan, why should you care about any of this? Because this is a massive testament to what happens when a major publisher steps away from the exhausting trend of forced live service multiplayer monetization.
Absolutely.
We are so used to games demanding daily logins and endless microtransactions, but here they trusted an auteur creator to take bold, uncompromising risks on a self-contained story, and in doing so, they have successfully resurrected a dormant brand.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it proves that the single-player psychological horror experience remains a vital, commercially potent genre. I mean, there is still a massive hunger for games that prioritize intimate, atmospheric tension over fast-paced action or endless digital storefronts.
People want an experience, not a chore.
Exactly. Townfall is setting a precedent that a legendary property can be treated as a fluid psychological state, a canvas for new ideas, rather than a rigid set of mechanics that have to be copied and pasted every single generation.
It's a huge win for people who want media to actually make them feel something.
But
even if that something is absolute paralyzing dread.
True.
To wrap this up, the mission of Townfall is crystal clear. It is using demanding analog mechanics, extreme physical vulnerability, and the heavy industrial atmosphere of 1996 Scotland to completely redefine how we experience horror.
The gates of St. Amelia officially open for everyone on September 24th, 2026.
It is really shaping up to be a defining moment for the genre. But before we go, I want to leave you with a thought. Something that wasn't explicitly stated in the preview, but feels incredibly relevant given the technology we just talked about.
Oh, I'm curious.
Well, we know that in the game, the CRTV's analog signal degrades based on Simon's emotional panic and physical injuries. The game reads his stress. But we also know the game relies heavily on the deep psychological feedback and haptics of the DualSense controller.
Right.
So consider this. If the game is designed to break down the barrier between you and the avatar, could your own real-world hesitation, your erratic controller inputs, how tightly you grip the triggers when you hear a creature in the dark, could that be the very thing that is actually scrambling the signal?
Oh, wow.
In a game this focused on intimacy and vulnerability, Is the CRTV just tuning into the nightmare of the town, or is the town actively tuning into you?
Now that is a terrifying prospect to chew on.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay observant, and maybe keep a few spare AA batteries around, just in case.